हरिः ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे। Okay, so then Adhyayana, Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 3, Bhakti alone is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Right, and here also is that all the scriptures, not just Bhagavatam or, you know, Gita, like this, no, all of them, the Ayurveda, Stapanaveda, Gandharva Veda, you know, the four Vedas themselves, the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, everything. You know. Okay. Then, down at the bottom of 62, continuing with Prabhupada's purports. Udahara dihi means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as hrit jnana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Right, so this is a very nice definition of broader, you know, how you say, what, brother? Broader outlook, you know, like that. Because otherwise it says, oh yes, no, we have a very wide outlook, very broad, like this and that, but no, it's still mundane. So there's still just different means within there. Let's say just like the frog in the well. In the well, yes, he has the full view of the whole well. He can see all 360 degrees and this and that. And so he's very, you know, broad-minded. No, he's not, because he only sees that. So in the material platform, even if you see the whole world, it's still, it's one planet in millions of planets in this universe. And this universe is one universe out of unlimited universes. And that unlimited universe is fit into one quarter of the creation. Right? So unless you can see how Krishna is connected with everything, you do not have a broad vision. Simple. Within narrow vision, some are a little bit wider and some are a little bit more narrow. But the point is, this only by seeing it in relation to Krishna is it actually broad outlook or broad-minded. That's the only way it's broad-minded. So therefore, it's not that Vaishnavas, oh, we're in the middle, so it's, you know, a little bit of this, that's still political. No, we see its connection to Krishna. Therefore, if anything on the left is connected to Krishna, it's good. And if it's not, it's useless. And on the right, if it's connected to Krishna, it's good. And if not, it's useless. That's all. It's very, very straightforward. It's very scientific. It's not. It's using the intelligence. That's why it's called Buddhi Yoga. While all these other perspectives are simply material perspectives based on one's own material desire. You know, so they may be sensual, maybe political, maybe religious, maybe on the platform of spiritual, but you see they don't include Krishna. You know, on the sensual platform is then, you know, either, you know, this use of senses is good and that's bad, or extended, then in this community thing, this is good. Or, you know, oh yeah, the Shastras say this, and is that's good or bad. Or the spiritual, yes, this is good for advancement. We're giving up the material attachments, coming to the Aha, so recording's in progress. Okay. Okay, so then, and Charvarajan on the left. Okay, well, that's the way it goes. So then, oh, okay, it's back. Okay, circumstances. One with a broader. Oh, I see. Means the he had two of them going. Okay, so. Then here, under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with the desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether an akama or a sakama or a mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any admixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and therefore called tivra, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10 purport. Okay, so here's this is one of those knock your socks off purports. So here we say that one with a broader look, even with a desire for material enjoyment or for liberation. So now this is something that the mundane mentality cannot understand. Because in the modern context, because you're not dealing with Vedic, so you're not dealing with personal, you're not dealing with the array of personal emotions and that people are just categories and they either fit in the category or not. So either you're 100% squeaky clean or you're 100% disgusting, terrible, and as you know, I can go on for days describing how terrible the person is. So, but the point is the soul on its own is eternal. The soul is as brilliant as the sun. The soul is never, never polluted. It becomes covered. It's just like a gold ring. You have a 24 karat gold ring. It drops in the mud. The gold is never polluted. It may be covered by mud, but the gold is still 24 karat. And so then it's just a matter of, so how do you reveal that? You just remove the mud. But in these mundane perspectives, then, both philosophical and religious and moral, they will take it that as soon as the mud touches, the gold no longer is pure. In fact, they will even claim it's not even gold. They will say, because mud has gone on this ring is no longer 24 karat gold. In fact, it's not even gold, it's just mud. Do we understand? This is a mundane perspective, exceedingly popular. But here we see is that even one with a broader outlook, they see everything in connection with Krishna, but if there's still material desire, then they should still worship the Lord directly. So that means the devotional process isn't dependent on karma and jnana, either as a process or as mentalities. It's completely independent. So we'll want to say, no, it's not. If this is there, it's ruined. But that's our interpretation. We cannot say that my perspective defines bhakti. So in this way, basically, those who consider themselves religious or those who are not religious but are annoyed with those who are religious, will use this point. If there's any spot, it's gone, it's finished. So here it's pointing out, no, because the whole point of this is bhakti alone is the conclusion, is that bhakti is independent. It's not dependent upon karma and jnana or our mentality that it is pure, therefore bhakti is pure. Because I think it's pure, therefore bhakti is pure. And if I say it's not pure, it's not pure. Bhakti is beyond our perspective, beyond our false ego, beyond our mundane perceptions. So here is being pointed out that Prabhupada says you can go directly and perform direct devotional service, even if there's material desire for bhukti, mukti, kama, bhukti, mukti, what is it? Akama, sakama, or mokshakama. Doesn't matter. You can perform bhakti directly. And so that's what the acharyas given us. They've given us that direct devotional service. That's why then Daiva Varnasha, because it's a descending process, It's then direct devotional service. It then it utilizes as tools the Varnashram. So that's the thing, because we come from this mundanely conceived concept of impersonal, you know, completely bogus, that impersonal means nothing. So therefore, then if I'm doing anything connected with it, it must be contaminated. Again, it'd be mundane and it can't be gold, right? So it doesn't matter how much mud is there. It's completely covered, half covered, just one spot. It's not gold anymore, depending upon how much envy I have in my heart. Basically, it comes down to that. Because of envy, we think like this. Because of attachments, then we think, oh, everything's for my enjoyment. And everybody else is looking at the world for their enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? So these basic underlying, you know, the original sin is this, is that we, by being covered by the avidya potency, therefore we can't see things connected to Krishna. And we see it all from this viewpoint of envy and attachment. I'm attached, therefore everyone else is attached. I'm envious, therefore everyone else is useless. You know, so we have to go beyond this to see that, no, it's just by taking up devotional service, that's the glory of the jiva. Nothing else is a glory. Someone's a professional, someone has, you know, so much money or position or effect. These aren't glories of the soul. They're just so many, as I think it's in the Bhagavatam points out, fallible soldiers. We think, yes, I'm strong because I have, you know, big family and position and wealth and influence, all these different things, but they're all fallible soldiers, because at the time of death, they're not going to help you. But if they are connected and used in Krishna's service, then they become useful tools in Krishna consciousness. Then they become ornaments. That's the point. If you have devotional service and then connect these to devotional service, then they become ornaments on the soul. But if they're not connected to devotional service, they're not ornaments. They don't belong to the soul anyway, because it's the conditioning that has those qualities. And that conditioning is expanding from the universal form. And so the qualities don't belong to us. The soul has its qualities, but because it's covered and it's identifying with that covering, it can only manifest the qualities of that covering. But those aren't the soul's qualities. Just like an actor stage says, the role that they're playing, but not the actor themselves. So here then we see is that bhakti is so independent, you know, completely independent on the absolute platform, that even if one understands that, yes, there is the Supreme Lord, so therefore the complete neophyte devotee, by hearing from the devotees, then has taken up the devotional process, but in their heart, there's going to be all the desires that were there just 2 seconds ago. You know, but they start to now analyze those in relationship to its value to Krishna. So they start dropping different things and all that. Some go very quickly, some take longer. And so the process, bhakti, is independent, because what it's doing is clearing the contamination on the heart, the covering on the heart. It's not that those coverings are more powerful than either the soul or bhakti. This is completely bogus. And sadly, you know, because it's a popular thing, because of the mundane viewpoint, and because of our, you know, because I can maintain my envy and attachment in the way I want by ignoring it. But if I do it in the other way, the envy and attachment has to be connected to Krishna and seen in that context, and its usefulness or not is seen in relationship to Krishna. So I have to change my perspective. People don't want to change their perspective. So we see is that one has to be very, very careful to understand that when Krishna makes these points about the devotional process, that this is the way it is, because he's God. He establishes how things are. It's not that, oh no, we make it the way we want. You know, that's an illusion. So here, therefore, it becomes very strong. So when the pure devotional practice that we do, it becomes very strong. And then we may have mixes of karma and jnana, but because we're using them subservient to the bhakti process, they get purified, but the bhakti remains strong. And then as time goes and there's less and less of this, then the bhakti becomes even more strong. And that means strong for us. It's already strong, but we can take advantage of it because we aren't distracted by the karma and jnana. Yeah. So then, yes. So then Jiva Goswami continues. The commentary says, Akama means the devoted bhakta. Sarvakama means a person with stated or unstated desires. One should worship the complete person who is without upadis, purusham. So Krishna is without upadis. So even though we may have upadis, we still worship that person without upadis. Right? So that's the whole thing. There. Tivrena means firmly, naturally, without weakness, without obstacles. Desires will also be fulfilled. It is said in Mahabharata, right? So desires will be fulfilled because it's so powerful. It will take care of everything. This whole idea is, no, as soon as there's a desire, it doesn't work. This is 100% mundane perspective. Because we're saying bhakti can't. Now there are places where Prabhupada says the heart's contaminated, then one can't take advantage. That's the point, is we can't take advantage. Bhakti remains completely pure. Bhakti remains in its power. And if there's any faith that yet advantage of this, so we see intent is the total most important aspect. When we want to blame someone, we will produce from our own mind an intent that they have. Oh, they're materialistic, but it's not necessarily. Oh, they wanted this or they want that. So we use our own mentality, our own anarthas onto the other person. Then we can say, see, he has the wrong mentality, therefore then they can't be practicing devotional service. When in actuality, that devotional service being independent, even we have material desires, if we understand that devotional service and serving Krishna directly is the only actual process, then the two go on together. You advance spiritually and the material things are taken care of. Bhakti is so complete. Krishna is so kind that he gives us a system that despite us, it can still work. But we have to have that faith in it. That's the whole point. We have faith in it. We have conviction of the process. It will work because we see is that there's Dhrita Shraddha at the Nishta position in the Madhya Madhikari, but that's still not on the platform of Uttama Madhikari, and it's still not on the platform of pure and alloyed devotional service. But at that, it's considered now, it's very solid. It's like, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the idea, then you come to Ruchi, you get the taste. So in that other one, then by regularly hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, then all this, what's in the heart will be taken away practically to nil. Practically means the last little bit will go as one advances more. So that's how the Bhagavatam, that's how the sages, that's how the Acharyas, that's how Krishna looks at it. And that should be the only only perspective that's important to us. And others say, oh, but this one thinks this and that, and but people think like this and that. It's all perspective, Prabhu. This is all bogus. Completely bogus. Non-devotional has nothing to do with what we're talking about. We have to acknowledge that this is the standard. And once we acknowledge this, then we can look at, okay, what are the details? How much is the intent proper? How much is not, how much of the desires are not. Then we can look at the details. But without accepting this, you cannot even discuss this topic with somebody. Because unless they've accepted that bhakti is independent, bhakti is is pure bhakti, is beyond, then they will never, ever be able to understand this balance. It's not possible. It's just impossible. But once they get purified and good association, they come to the point where they do have that faith, then they can understand. Then you can discuss. Yes, please.
Guru Maharaj, if we see some strong anarthas in our heart, so what should be our effort? We should just ignore it and more focus on hearing and chanting, or we should do some efforts to liberate ourselves from it?
The point is if you know what's there, then you try to avoid, you know, the difficulties that come up from that particular anartha. You know, and so if you're working in areas where that anartha is not manifest, then you don't have to worry. But if you're working in areas where the anartha is manifest, then you be aware. But the point is the focus is on Krishna consciousness as the primary. And then you see how to engage this in the Lord's service, if it has elements that can be engaged, or if not, then how to avoid so it doesn't distract one from devotional service. But it's not that you don't have to get out one of those cat of nine tails and flog yourself. You understand? No, especially the old ones that were chains and hooks and all that. You know, no, you don't have to do that. Okay. Yes, it is said in Mahabharata, when the devotee is present, Lord Vishnu is present. One serves the Lord by remembering him in one's house. Quote, unquote, giving means offering to the Lord what one will enjoy. So that means whatever you're going to do, you're doing something, you're cooking something, you're making something, you're going somewhere, then it has to be offered to the Lord. It's nice, you know. It says even you go someplace and it's beautiful sunset, that it's coming from Krishna. Krishna is that beauty. The result of such giving cannot be attained even by Indra. Right? By giving everything to Krishna, you know, for you, even Indra and his post and how pious he is cannot attain that position. It's only through devotion. In other words, Indra being Indra won't bring him any closer to Krishna. It's only by surrender to Krishna, then, and offering everything to Krishna, then it becomes, that is then what is special. That takes the living entity to Krishna. We have to understand that the living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. They belong with Krishna. They belong in performing the pure devotional service. It's not an alternative. You know, no, that is the natural thing. And if you're not following that one natural position, then there's 8,400,000 alternative, you know, secondary things that are unnatural. And one can take to those. But the natural position for the soul is serving Krishna. There is no other position. So when that's there and bhakti is the main thing, there is nothing else. You know, everything is Krishna, there is nothing else. Then one becomes situated nicely. So that's firmly, that's naturally, without weakness, without obstacle. Doesn't mean that in the environment, material environment, it's not, there are not obstacles to the transformation of the material energy as you would like it. But what it means is there's no obstacles to you being devotional and surrendering to Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna, you know, at whatever state of realization we're at. That's the meaning of no obstacles. Not that someone comes and bother you, that's an obstacle. No, that's just material energy. That's the modes of nature. That's the Adi Atma, Adi Daiva, Adi Bhote. But our being able to remember Krishna, like Prahlad Maharaj, there's no obstacles. So therefore, whether, you know, it's the snake pit, whether it's the elephants, whether it's the demons trying to kill him with weapons, whether it's boiling oil, whether he's being tossed off a cliff, it doesn't matter. He's always absorbed in Krishna. None of those can create an obstacle to stop him from being devotional. That's what it means by no obstacles. Not that, oh, everything will go nice and there'll just be people will just come up and you know, everything just works and that's all. If Krishna wants to arrange like that, then that happens. And if not, then it doesn't. Like you see, Arjuna's fighting in the battlefield. So many things, you know, it's said he crossed over this insurmountable battlefield because of Krishna's grace. So, but it's because the devotion's always going on. Therefore, then Krishna, when he likes, he makes some obstacle. Bhishma Dev's there, Karna's there, Drona's there. You know, and other times, then there's everything goes very smoothly. Like for the first 10 days of the war, it didn't go so good for the Pandavas. So that means more than half what didn't go so well for the Pandavas. But after the fall of Bhishma Dev, then now it started to go in the Pandavas' favor. And then when Drona was gone, so then now who can challenge the Pandavas? Who's strong enough? Once those two are out of the way, then there's no one else. So that was 10 days to 12 days. So that means one third of it then was going very favorably. But two thirds was not externally. But the Lord, that was there 100% of the time. That's what also happened in the obstacle. Want to do something in their material nature, this adiatmic idea can be both the cushions. No, that's not the obstacle. The obstacle is remembering or not remembering. Please.
Guru Maharaj, she said that if I see that the person, she was a teacher of monks, and she said, if I see the person who doesn't have this internal battle inside, I afraid more about this person because it means that she still not moving to the God completely. And in this case, we can think that it's
this point of there being external obstacles will always be there. It's just a matter of what someone who's more pious, his obstacles, they go away easier. You know, or in a progressive way, like that, he's not defeated by them. Or they're smaller, but then in his mind, they're big. You know what I'm saying? It means for a person who's cultured, a small amount of lack of culture is a disturbance. For someone who's uncultured, building full of uncultured people making trouble is just normal. So you also have to see the amount. So for the pious person, the amount of, going and that is going like this. But for the other person, then the experience is like that. Does that make sense? He has no material desire, therefore then, it's sort of like this. But point is the pious person, Krishna's taking care. And so there's obstacles, but it doesn't mean those obstacles won't go away. But for the karmi, those obstacles come up, they don't go away. They may get this, that, according to their previous karma. If they have pious karma, then the obstacles will go. But ultimately, then what happens? It's all lost, it's all gone. Does that make sense? So one has to see is that piety means seeing things connected to Krishna. Impiety means not. We have to understand is that if you're in the material world, it's just like, let's say, like we were saying before, you go down to the garbage dump. Because you're a devotee, does it not smell? So a garbage dump is a garbage dump. So therefore we do our service, but because of the smell, it doesn't disturb us from our service. And so then if Krishna wants to make it nice, then great. But it's not that piety is meant to make our life materially nice. Our point is we're not supposed to be in the material world. We're supposed to be in the spiritual world of Krishna. That's then what we're looking for is there, not here. So the attachment to piety, we try to make here nice as if it was the spiritual world, but because it's comfortable for us, Bhakti means that I'm making things nice here for Krishna's comfort. As the king is enjoying, the servant of the king has the same facilities, right? The king lives in a palace. Where are the servants? Where are they living? In the palace. He's eating wonderful food. What food are they eating? Same food. He's dressing in such nice clothes. They're also dressed in nice clothes. You don't take some beggars off the street, leave their rags and then dirty and that, bring them into the palace, and they serve the king nicely and everything. So that's the whole point. Vaishnava etiquette means how they develop, deal in the world. We may say it's not practical, but then do you want to go to the spiritual world? Our idea is no, material world will be nice. No, it won't be nice. You can make it a little bit nicer, but we make it nicer for Krishna. And it's nice and all that, and it's nice because it's nicer for Krishna. And then it may continue or it may move. It doesn't have to remain. The devotion remains, but the external situation may change. You know, say, just like say, you go to some place and you're staying in some room temporarily for a few days. It's not that you don't make adjust the room to make it nice so it's comfortable to use. But after 3 days, you leave and it's gone. It's not that comfortableness, now you take it with you. And then you go to another place, and then where you are there, then you make that comfortable and then you'll leave again. So it's temporary. But that trying to do it nice, let's say you're setting up nice so you can do your worship for the deities nicely, and that, where's the best place for them? You know, what's the cleanest? Where's the best for that? That's eternal. That lasts eternally. But the actual place and that desk, that'll all disappear. That makes sense? So we have to understand that actual piety means pleasing Krishna. Material piety means pleasing ourselves. You know, we may be in material piety, maybe doing things to help others, giving charity and do this and that, but it makes us happy that we're doing this. I gave in charity, the person was happy with it. That makes me happy. That's the goal. I'm doing it through the medium of that, but the other is I make Krishna happy. That's the goal. When Krishna's happy, that's actually what makes us happy. That's natural for us. So, in other words, to make someone else happy, that makes us happy, but it's Krishna that is the one. If we try to do it on the material platform, it's temporary. It'll always be lost, but with Krishna, because we're part and parcel of Krishna, that's why we become happy. Yes, please.
Guru Maharaj, my son recently said that I understand what is the main problem in material world, because everything is temporary and we don't have enough time for everything. And I think if, even theoretically, if it not will be temporary, and if material life could be eternal, does it mean that we can be happy here or without connection with Krishna, because we need also another aspect? Just temporariness will not is not main cause of our sufferings. Or if we will be here eternal, we can be happy just on the level of interaction jivas with another jivas.
You can't be, because the jiva with another jiva, what is a jiva? Jiva is part and parcel of Krishna. So when ourselves as a part and parcel of Krishna, servant of Krishna, is associating with a part and parcel of Krishna, servant of Krishna, that then can give, that can be nice because that is connected with Krishna. But just the material that they, when we say jivas with jivas, the karmis are, is it jivas with jivas? Or is it conditioned nature with conditioned nature? Right? And that conditioned nature with conditioned nature, then it's going to have a problem, because there's so many, the modes of nature. You have, you know, three modes of nature. So 3 × 3 = 9. 9 × 9 = 81. 81 × 81, like this it goes until you get 8,400,000. So in that, then where do you find, out of all these people, someone who has a similar enough conditioning that the two conditionings get along? Right? Not so much. So they're not, the karmis, non-devotees are not dealing soul to soul. They're dealing conditioning to conditioning. They have nothing to do. They don't even know what the soul is. Right? In Buddhism, there's no soul at all. And in the Abrahamic, they say there's a soul, but they have absolutely no way to define it. Some say it's the mind. Some say it's the body. You know, this, that, you know, because the soul, you have to bury the body because you have to take that with you to heaven. You want to take that old funky thing to heaven? You know? So that's the whole thing, is they can't define it. So they don't actually know. They have an understanding. There's something left over from previous, but they can't define it. They have no idea. They know there's God, but they can't define God. They know there's the material world. They can't define it. So the tattva is not very clear. So the point is they're not actually dealing soul to soul unless they're dealing as servants of God and two servants of God. That's the only way then you're dealing with soul. Now, someone on the Uttam platform can see that everybody is soul and therefore then relates to them as the soul because they know they're servant of God. And so in that way, they interact with them. That's why you see the Uttamas can do things that the Madhyamas don't do. Like someone who's inimical, the devotional servant, they can deal with them and there's no problem. Or even sometimes they're dealing with the animals. We don't do that. You know? Jagannath Das Babaji is sitting down in the street there, you know, saying, and somebody gives him some chapatis, and then all the street dogs that are there, he calls them over, and then he shares his chapatis with them because he sees them all as a pure spirit soul, servant of Krishna, and they're all Dambasis and stuff like that. So he's not making any distinction there. So we're not going to be able to do that. You know, it goes on nicely, and the dogs all act nicely, and nobody fights, and it's, you know, you're just dealing with a different level of mentality. Haridas Thakur is sitting in his cave, and there's a huge python, I mean, a monster python in the cave. But he just sees it's, you know, he's a devotee, and here's another devotee, and I'm taking shelter of the cave to chant, and he's a devotee, he's taking shelter of the cave, so what's the problem? And so the python does not bother Haridas Thakur. You know, Prabhupada says that the Paramatma tells the animal don't bother. So they don't.
So Guru Maharaj, when we preach to people, means we should not put emphasis on the principle that this world is Ashashvatam. We should tell that it's Dukkhalaya because it's not connected with the principle of Ananda in Krishna, in aspect of Bhagavan.
Well, that's why it's Dukkhalaya. Means it's miserable because of its temporary nature. The soul's eternal, God's eternal. You know, the soul wants eternal relationships, but the material world only gives temporary relationships. That's why people are miserable. And anything you get, it's going to be temporary. So even if you get a nice house, then you have to fight over it. You have to pay your taxes. You know, the rats also like your house. The termites like your house. The neighbors want to take your house. Governments decide they want to build a highway where your house is. You know, I mean, it's just, it's constant. So it's material desire creates misery. Right? Because everything is, that the desire is not connected with the soul. But when you deal with things connected to the soul, that doesn't create misery. You know, so they go together. Because it's temporary, that's why it's miserable.
Guru Maharaj,
spiritual is eternal, therefore it's not miserable.
Guru Maharaj, if we interact even with the eternal aspect of Krishna, with the Brahman, Sat, even in this case we can't enjoy, means Ashashvatam
because there's no Ananda aspect. You're dealing with the sat, and that addresses a portion of the soul. That's why the soul in the beginning, having no, not dealing anything on the platform of soul, when you come in contact with the sat principle, then it's nice because you're dealing with one part of the soul. But still, there's no knowledge. You know, like we see is the Mayavadis and Buddhists. They don't know there's a soul. So they deal with eternality, but they're not dealing with themselves. And so how much can they actually be happy? Then chit, you add in some chit, you know, the Lord, he's controlling everything. So that's okay. That's a little bit more. But it's still, it's not. It's only when he's a person and you're a person, you relate to each other as people. That's where Ananda happens. That makes sense. Okay. Now, can you continue with Jiva Goswami? Kapila says to Kardama, director of the progeny, the worship of persons such as you, who fully concentrate on me in their hearts, is never fruitless. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:21-24. Right? So he has his duties. He's doing whatever it is. He's a Prajapati. So then he's going to be dealing with all these different aspects of the creation and the living entities. So then him dealing in all those ways then is not a problem because he's always absorbed in the Lord. So that's the thing is, are they absorbed in the Lord? Not that, oh, he's a householder. He can't be absorbed in the Lord. Like that. That's not the point. You can't take our ideas, just like we see in Catholicism. It says, oh, if there's anything to do with the senses, then it can't be pure. So therefore all priests have to be celibate, you know, then Christ is born with the Immaculate Conception and this and that and so many things, and then they don't acknowledge, you know, Mary Magdalene because, you know, the background is not good. Even King Solomon, they kind of like try to avoid him. You know, he's got too many wives. It's a little freaky. You know, so just they just put aside anything that doesn't match their, you know, immaculate idea. So here is that, but they're trying to engage in the Lord's service. But you see it has problems. And so anybody exactly one. Them, then they go after. I mean, we have to remember is that the Inquisition was done by the Catholics. They're supposed to be the pure, nice people. And they spent hundreds of years catching, killing, and torturing people because, you know, of something that they thought was not right. You know, so that's the whole point is that if you're immaculate, why would you do this to people? If you're pure, why would you bother people? It means you would want to see them develop. So then are they developing in their God consciousness? That's how you purify, not by burning them at the stake. You know? So it becomes a big difficulty is that when you introduce these material concepts of what their material idea of what's purity, then it's a problem. But at the same time is because people have this, therefore there is rules and regulations and what's right and what's wrong so that they can, you know, do the right thing and then feel, you know, put their attention there. But the problem comes is then when it comes down between this happening nicely or not happening nicely, you know, the activities, the karma, the activities of the rituals and all that, if it's not done properly, then they can't accommodate that the person can have any devotion at all. And so then that becomes a big obstacle to their advancement. They're not going to get beyond neophyte mentality in this area. You know, with many times here with the direct activities, japa and worshiping, they do really nicely there and advance very nicely. Then when it comes to other aspects, the religious and other social, political, economic, sometimes they have big obstacles and then they get distracted by those. That makes sense? Yeah. So here is therefore those who are fully absorbed in the Lord, then it's never fruitless to respect them. Right? Or another meaning of the verse is that the person with material desire should worship the Lord intently. This will produce pure bhakti in the end, right? He has material desires. He should worship the Lord with great focus and attention, knowing that that's the only process that will help. Then it will produce pure bhakti in the end. So that means in the beginning, it's not pure bhakti, but the point is he has the intent to attain the pure bhakti. Therefore, one moves forward very nicely. With this intention, the verse teaches bhakti of different types. The process of bhakti is effective for even a person with all desires. How much more it is effective as the abhideya for those with pure bhakti and for those desiring liberation. It is a process for all people. So therefore, if it works still when they have material desire, then how much more effective is it for those who are on the spiritual platform as the pure devotees and the people desiring liberation? And then how even more wonderful is it for just the pure devotees, those who go beyond liberation? So this whole point is what Jiva Goswami is establishing here, in the beginning, is that bhakti is the cat's meow. It is the sliced bread. It is, all the, whatever is the most, it is that. And it is that on its own. And so if that touches anything, it makes anything nice. That's the whole point. It makes anything nice. And so therefore, and the more purified it is, the more quickly it takes on those wonderful qualities. And even someone with all contamination, he comes forward. It moves forward. So we have to see there's so many examples in Shastra like this. But we tend to avoid those because we have the idea if there's any imperfection, then, the process can't work. But that's the point is no, we if we see any imperfection, we can't take advantage because of our contamination. But the process of bhakti will work. If it's working for us, why won't it work for someone else? The person who's complaining, oh no, but if they have this contamination, it can't work. Are they saying they have no contaminations at all? So unless they can establish that, then why are they making this point? Why is it that person can't advance, but they can advance? Now, the thing is someone with different anarthas, like say someone with the anarthas of money may point out problems with people with power. Oh, he's interested in power. He can't be a devotee, but he's interested in the money. Someone else would point out, oh, he's interested in money. He can't be a devotee. And someone else would go, well, you criticize devotees and all that and everything. So you can't be a devotee. And it just goes on and on and on. Point is everybody has their particular set of anarthas that have to be purified from the heart. But devotional service is such, it's the complete process. It is, as Jiva Goswami, it is a process for all people. So when it says sarva kama, that means all desires, whether they're pious or impious. So say, oh, you're too ritualistic, you can't be a devotee. And the ritualistic person, oh, you don't accept rules and regulations at all, you can't be a devotee. So, but the point is devotional service is for everybody. Yeah? We're good? Riti. Having shown the superiority of bhakti to the Supreme Lord over worship of demigods, the next anucheda states that the demigod worshippers can achieve the highest benediction of pure devotion only by the association of the pure devotees of the Lord. So, therefore, if you want to elevate anyone, it's only by association with pure devotees that you can elevate yourself. There is no other process. If one thinks that there's another process, one is mistaken. Only pure bhakti, as practiced, in the association of pure devotees, that's what can elevate you. So we see is in the scriptures that all the nice devotees and all that and others who were associated with them, they took on wonderful qualities. Like even Prahlad Maharaj's demon, classmates, they all started chanting and everything because of Prahlad. That's the process. So association is the most important element to make the devotional process work. Anucheda 32. Moreover, it is said, Eta van eva yadatam iha nishreyaso dayaha. Bhagavat yachalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha. All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.11. Right? So the highest benediction, it says, then here is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed on the Supreme Lord. That's the benediction that you can get. And how do you get that? Only by the association of the pure devotee of the Lord. So that's why then we must be, you know, reading Prabhupada's books and the acharyas, you know, and seeing the acharyas instructions in that context, then associating with those committed to Srila Prabhupada's instructions and that to practice them in their life. This is then how one will get that perfectional benediction. Okay. That's Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.11. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. All living entities in different statuses of life within the material creation, beginning from the first demigod, Brahma, down to the small ant, are conditioned under the law of material nature, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity in his pure state is conscious of the fact that he is a part and parcel of the Lord. But when he is thrown into the material world on account of his desire to lord it over material energy, he becomes conditioned by the three modes of material nature and thus struggles for existence for the highest benefit. This struggle for existence is something like following the will of the wisp under the spell of material enjoyment. All plans of material enjoyment, either by worship of different demigods as described in the previous verses of this chapter, or by modernized advancement of scientific knowledge without the help of God or demigod, are illusory only. For despite of all such plans for happiness, the conditioned living being within the compass of material creation can never solve the problems of life, namely birth, death, old age, disease. The history of the universe is full of such plan makers, and many kings and emperors come and go, leaving a plan-making story only. But the prime problems of life remain unsolved despite all endeavors by such plan makers. No matter what they do, birth, death, old age, and disease remain. Right? Therefore, unless the gross materialists or the worshippers of the temporary demigods come in contact with the transcendentalists, so here, gross materialists are those who take up the modern, you know, scientific advancement of scientific knowledge. And then you have the other materialists of the who are worshippers of the temporary demigods. Unless they come in contact with a transcendentalist like the pure devotee of the Lord, their attempts are simply a waste of energy. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. Only a pure devotee of the Lord can show one the right way of progressive life. Otherwise, both the materialistic way of life without any information of God or the demigods and the life engaged in the worship of the demigods in pursuit of temporary material enjoyments are different phases of phantasmagoria. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.11 purport. So whether you are accepting the Vedic culture or whether you're not accepting, any plans you make, any ideas for happiness you have are all phantasmagoria. They're unreal. They can't give any satisfaction. They will not come to fruition, and one will leave this particular body and situation, and all that'll be left is a plan. You know, how many plans? You know, what was Caesar's plan? You know, what was Napoleon's plan? You know, what was Hitler's plan, or Lenin's plan, or where are they? They're all dead. They're all gone. Just talks about plans and, you know, what actually happens. Yes.
Grunhraj, one of my students from India, he asked me, all of his family served to the Hanuman, and he is a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. And he asked, will they get benefit only if they understand benefit in pure bhakti, or only if they worship to him as to the pure devotee, or in any case they will get connection with the pure bhakti?
Means, if they're worshiping him simply as a demigod, by worshiping him, then they get this benefit or that benefit, then they'll just get those just pious benefits. But if they understand that he's the servant, you know, eternal servant, you know, of Lord Ram, he's the great devotee, the pure devotee, then they'll get that devotional benefit. Like that. But in any case, because he's, well, they'll have that contact, because he says the family is worshiping Hanuman. They're seeing him as a demigod. But he was from that same family, but he now is a devotee. So by Hanuman's grace, he comes in contact with the devotees, and now he's a devotee. So now his family, by taking advantage of the association with their family member who's now a devotee, then they can start to see like that, and they can move forward.
In Christianity, we have in the medieval time, the people who consider that Jesus Christ is not a god, but he is a great servant of God. Does it their name was Arians? Does it mean they could be connected with a pure devotional servant service, or if they understood that he is a servant and they
yes,
want
it can.
To...
It just depends upon how far that they're interested to go. You know. It just depends upon how far that they're interested to go. And so then, you know, one can move forward. So if they're seeing like that, and that has that mood of pure devotion, they'll move forward nicely in that direction. You know, and if they don't complete it in that life, in the next life, they'll take birth in a place suitable to continue that devotion. Right? You know, they'll be born into a family and know more and have more of that contact with pure devotional service. Does that make sense? You said they're called the Aryans or the Alans.
They were followers of Ari. Ari was bishop who...
Okay. Followers of Ari. Because, I mean, also, Iran is known because it's Aryan, you know? And there's also a tribe up there called the Alans, who is, you know, off of the... And they went over and conquered Rome. You know, so you do have those who identify like that.
Yes, Guru Maharaj, it's interesting that they named your Aryans because they were just followers of Ari, but their vision was very similar to vision of people in Vedic culture.
Yes, and so therefore, then, you know, depending how far they get in that life, the next life they'll be more in contact where they can go farther. You have to remember is that it goes on life after life. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.